Welcome back to Revelatorium, the podcast that comes around once a month, just about as often as I seem to be booking flights these days. With what disposable income am I doing that? You know, I keep forgetting that I need to make money as a self-employed person, but then I just keep booking trips. It's been one a month so far this year. Nothing scheduled for March, but the month is still young, so we'll see. But I'm coming to you very raw and half in my PJs, half in GORP gear right now for unbeknownst reasons. I wanted to film earlier. Like, this is a lot later in the month than I'd like to. I hold myself to a very high standard. And I was going to film this on Leap Day, but then I was crying about my feelings because it's Pisces season and I just turned a new age. And then I wanted to shirk my responsibilities to talk to my friends and FaceTime like four people and then basically just see people, hang out with people, go on a little social bender. Need that. Want that. Like, can't have it all the time. When I'm able to, I take the opportunity. But then it's like, oh, well, what about these things that matter to me, my creative projects? Well, what is the biggest creative project in your life if not friendship? Okay. Co-creating a relationship and a beloved connection. Okay. So now I'm back. Not to make money. That's not what we do on this podcast. That's not what we do here. We talk about my revelations. We talk about what I'm taking and leaving from this month. We talk on this podcast, we talk about my life's work, most of which is not actually making money. You know, my life's work is making plans with my friends. That's extremely important to me. And actually, the first revelation from this February of 2024 is that I'm a ... proactive person? ? This is something that, like, I took for granted for so long. I think a couple episodes ago, I talked about how the advice to just be yourself, like, finally clicked for me, because people always say that, but you never quite investigate it. You never quite, like, really determine for yourself what that means to you and your life. And I finally got to an age and got to a point where I was like, okay, I can show up super honest, super myself. Like, the more honest and forthcoming you are about who you are, the better your life will be. I love it when I reveal something, a little hidden desire, a little secret thing that's going on in my life to somebody new, and they not only receive it, but they reciprocate and they regurgitate something and they maybe even appreciate, and they say they've never heard anything like that in their life before. How rich, okay? Instead of just locking everything away to strangers, you give them a piece of yourself. And some people don't want to do that because they feel like by giving them a piece of themselves, they're going to lose something. But actually, you gain a lot. Because if they give you a piece of themselves, then you're whole. But sometimes you give pieces of yourself to people, they give you nothing back. That's how you know that's not a pie you want to eat, okay? Can't do it. For example, when I was in elementary school, me and my friend Lauren, we'd buy a pack of Oreos. Two came in each package. We would give each other one. Were they the same type of Oreo? Were we functionally net zeroing the exchange? Yeah. Yeah. But it's about caring and sharing. Okay. So in the same way that I realized what it means to be yourself, lately I've been reckoning with the fact that I am a proactive person. Maybe not in all departments, but certainly when it comes to making plans with my friends, I am someone who just, like, takes a lot of initiative. I think I was just talking with somebody in my jazz band tonight because he has, like, a lot of friends he's known since, like, grade school or, like, college roommate, and he's, like, in his 50s. And I'm like, for a man, that's actually very impressive. And I tried to get him to articulate kind of how he kept those relationships up, but he pretty much just said that his wife is the one that, like, has the phone calls, and then they just kind of, like, they'll just, like, plan trips every single year to see each other. Like, they'll have, like, some of these friends, they'll see each other, like, 2-3 times a year, which is, like, really good. Like, for a long distance friendship, seeing the person 2-3 times a year, that's excellent. Like, if I can see my long distance friends, like, one time a year, that's excellent. There's some people where it's more convenient. You know, if you go to them and they go to you, that's 2 times, right? But I was like, how the hell have you kept these relationships up and planned these trips? And he just made it out to seem like it's kind of easy. But I was like, no, there's so many people that have travel ideas in mind or want to move to some place or want to do this thing. And you just kind of like, you waffle on it a while. And I don't need a waffle on it. You know, I flip the pancake pretty quick. Okay. There's no need to do the waiting for it to crisp up. I'm like, let's see it rise and come pour some syrup on it. You know, the quicker you flip the pancake, the sweeter the syrup tastes. The quicker you flip the pancake, the sooner you get the syrup. I need to write children's books. Maybe not. I don't know what lessons I have. Maybe I'll write a children's book about being proactive. I think that I have some domain. I think this domain is germane to me. But yeah, I just planned a trip to Oaxaca for my golden birthday. I was born on a leap year. It's a leap year this year. I turned 28 on the 28th of February, and Oaxaca is my sister city. I alluded to this in a previous episode. It's the sister city to my hometown. I grew up like sending care packages down there, so I was always like familiar with it, and then its name has just kind of been bobbing up. And so I was like, you know what? Let me take a bite out of that little, maybe not apple. What's like, oh my God, you know what fruit I discovered in Mexico? They call it tuna. Okay. I was getting horchata and it had a tuna in it. It said horchata con tuna. And I was like, what in the world? I know that's not what I think it is. And you know what it was? This amazing, like pink, almost like icy texture, like icy movie theater drink thing. And I was like, what the hell is this like slushy ass fruit? They gave me a little sample. Love that. The best way to get samples, you guys, is to be curious. Okay. Sometimes I don't even know a place is capable of giving samples until I'm like, okay, so what's kind of the difference between that and that? And sometimes instead of wanting to explain, people just want to show you, you know, they just want to put it on the table. They don't want to use their words, and it's totally fine. If you have an alternative way of showing me, it happens all the time at like breweries. Obviously ice cream is like famous for that. But ice cream is like you truly just ask for a sample. But in this case, I was just like, what does that really taste like? And she just gave me a spoonful and I was like, that's delicious. Shared it with all my friends. Everyone was amazed. You know what it was? Prickly pear. So new favorite fruit unlocked. God knows it's not in season probably anytime in the US. So that's going to be a special treat for when I return south of the border. I don't know why I brought up the tuna. Oh, because we were talking about Bob. Like, once again, you guys, I will always get back to the fruit of it all. So bobbing for apples, no. Maybe we're bobbing for prickly pear. Does that float? Doesn't matter. So kept bobbing up and I was like, let me take a plunge and plan this trip. I was turned on to Oaxaca last summer, like July. I had this trip in the works I was socializing it in like September, October, really locking it in December, January, and then we went in February. So like, that's pretty damn good, okay, for an international trip. And I knew I wanted to do it for my birthday. So I was like, it's going to be in February. So it's not like we could have done it sooner than that. I am so fucking happy that I'm a proactive person. Like, I don't know how I got this way. I've been describing myself this way, like, in corporate environments, like when they ask for like three, like for some reason, my last employer, they would always ask for like three words to describe you. And I was like, how did we get to three? Why do they have to be words? Why can't they be sounds? And that's the problem with working in big tech. They're not creative and they have no space or allowance for eccentricity in my mind. So yeah, basically I've known that I've been proactive, but I just kind of thought that was like a word that you say because people like to hear it. Like, I kind of thought it was just like everyone has that, but it's just like a nice word to say. Like, you know how everyone says, oh, my greatest weakness is being a perfectionist. It's like, okay, is that even real? Is that even real? In my case, I just realized that that is real. My biggest weakness right now is that I'm a perfectionist. But the proactivity is real. And I'm like, I book those freaking vacations. Like, I'm booking a trip a month. Like, when I have an idea, it's like, do you guys want to hear my lineup for the year? I'm almost scared to say it because what if these things don't happen? Basically, I have the opportunity to go to Cuba for a political thing in April. And I'm just kind of like, I think I need to take it. I think I need to take it. I think I just need to do it. So Cuba, maybe New York before that, depending on how the flights work out. May will be Vancouver Island. June will be, oh, what's June? June will be camping on the summer solstice. July, I'm so sorry, Midwesterners. I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, I will be going on a cruise of the Great Lakes for my mom's birthday. God bless her. She was born in Milwaukee, grew up in Michigan, and the woman wants to see the Great Lakes. I thought that she probably saw them enough growing up, but I guess not. And so we're going on a cruise. And, you know, maybe I'll rediscover my origins. As I discussed in an earlier podcast episode, I have a Midwestern sensibility about me. Or maybe I talked about that in Vlogmas. Maybe. So go over to my patreon.com/Katherow if you want to hear about that. But maybe I'll reconnect with some of my roots and it'll be important. But yeah, July will be that. August, I'm trying to go camping for my friend's birthday. September, I have a trail work trip with my dad. And then Montreal for the fall equinox. And then October, maybe Utah. November, who knows where we'll go for Thanksgiving. And then December, definitely California. And if I can figure out how to make money in a way that allows for more than my basic necessities, New Zealand. Autoreia. And I fucking know that there are some viewers out there that are rallying for that. I hear your cries and I'm crying too. I want to get the hell down there. I want to celebrate New Year's in the light. And I got to celebrate my birthday in the heat this year, in the sun. And I was like, this is what the summer babies don't know that they have. Oaxaca, 90 degrees every single day. So much sun. The UV was a 13. Only one of us got tiny, tiny bit sunburned. So it was like wildly successful. No one got sick. No one got injured. Everyone got along so great. It was six people. This is like one of my series. In the series of trips I call loosely close friends conferences, which like I need to do a better job of packaging up and like repurposing. Like I actually want to campaign for everyone doing these. If you have even an ounce of proactivity, I highly recommend planning one of these. All you got to do is find a location you want to go, pick a date. Like I just listed, equinoxes, solstices, birthdays make great occasions. Any sort of significant date or just literally any weekend where you're just like, that would be a good weekend to do that. Book, like basically just name a place, find a date, put it on your Instagram story. If you use Instagram, put it on close friends and say, who want me? Who wants to come and who want me? And just see. And then people will raise their hands because everyone wants to go on a trip, but nobody wants to plan it. And that's why you have, like, if you are a proactive person, you need to recognize that that is a gift, a talent, and a skill, and you should be sharing it. And I'm like so happy that I realized that I love to like plan events and trips and I'm good at it. I'm a really good host. I know how to like plan enough and like scrounge up an itinerary, but like still source everything from everybody and like get way in and like have it be a little bit more democratic and sort of like not as like, you know, authoritative. Like it's just, I can put together a whole guide if you want me to. Like I really could. I could put together a zine on how I do these. This is probably my like eighth one and maybe the most successful one so far because of how much everyone enjoyed each other's company and was just so interested in each other and like the amount of laughter. I think that's probably my most successful, like if I'm to measure the success of any vacation, it's the amount of laughter, I think, or the amount of awe, maybe a hybrid of those two. We have to figure out the weighting, maybe 60% laughter, 40% awe, weight those together and see what you get. But those close friends conferences, those are my life's work. Making plans for those. 2023 didn't have many of those because I had a surge of them in 2022 after trying them out in 2021. 2021 was pilot. 2022 was like first round, like beta. And then 2023 was sort of like, okay, need to like re-prototype a little bit / just rest. And then 2024, I'm like, wait, yeah, we're going to be back on it. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. I'm not going to lie, but that's why I realized being a proactive person, I just keep saying the word proactive, but I'm like, I just recognize that like when I think about the number of trips I've been invited on that someone else planned, it's going to be less than five. Definitely less than five in the last 2 years. Maybe, like, in my head, I'm like, it's one, two, maybe three. Okay. Versus I've planned like three a year myself for the past like few years. I'm not here to brag. I'm here to proselytize. I'm here to encourage. I want everyone to reap the rewards of gathering all your most beloved people together and not waiting for a goddamned bachelorette. I've talked about this so much, like I don't think I need to talk about any more, but I'm just going to remind you that every single time I want to do these, I'm reminded of why life's worth living. They affirm my purpose, my value, my relationships, my spirit, all of it. So I realized that. And then also like in my like political work, whenever we're like springing up a new team or new project, like I am very much like, what's going on? What are we doing here? Like in the back of my mind, I'm like, we never followed up on that. We need to do that. Like that is just sort of my slant. That's my skill and I'm going to lean into it. So that's revelation number one, being a proactive person. There's certainly, well, I asked you guys if you're proactive people, so we'll see the spread of it, but that's one. And then number two is the newfound and newly articulated power of the domino fall. So I think we've all heard of like the butterfly effect. Someone call this the butterfly effect, but in this case, I can track every wing flap. Okay, so the butterfly effect is like little tiny actions kind of all coincide and like, you know, flutter off of each other, and then it creates this like big effect. The domino fall, I like that better because it's like I saw who tipped the first domino, and then from there on, I saw every domino after fall, and I'm like, oh, these are all connected. What the hell am I talking about? Well, I think I'm someone that obviously is very sensitive, and I'm sensitive both ways. So like when you're a sensitive person, you're sensitive to criticism, but you're also sensitive to encouragement. And so when one person pushes one domino, like for example, like when I, this is not an excellent, you know, case in point, but like when I said on this podcast, I want to create a zine, email me. That was like the first domino. I actually tipped that. Okay. I tipped the first domino, and then few of you replying to the email or emailing me tipped the next domino. And then from there, it was just like more and more and more people came to support. Someone emailed me to like try to help with the website. That didn't really come to fruition, but like dominoes were falling. I've really recognized this in my comedy career because it's only been, let's see, it's March. So it's only been, I started in September. So maybe five-ish months, roughly. And the first open mic I ever did, the host and the producer there were so welcoming and encouraging. And then I just hosted my first show a couple of weeks ago, and one the producer from my first open mic was performing. So I got to introduce them and be like the person that welcomed me into comedy. And like it was such a nice full circle moment because I was like, it hasn't even been that long, but I'm already sort of seeing like the redemption. And before that, there was actually someone in an improv class that was like, do you do stand up? Because you should. And like, she was also a producer at that open mic. So she tipped the first one. And then I met another person there that sort of like, you know, helped the chain keep falling. I kept showing up. I kept pushing dominoes. And then it's like, I've just kind of like realized when you sort of like pull at the door handle, like more doors will open. Like it really just, and it like, I like the domino thing because it's kind of like, you do have to push a little bit. You have to use a little bit of force, but then it just starts to like click clack and the momentum picks up a lot. I'm a big fan of like putting things into a pipeline. So like my internet friendship process, famously, I call my oomph to mutual pipeline. I've shot so many people down it and they come out the other end and in real life friend. And it's an amazing process. Those pipes are squeaky clean, well-oiled. There's so many different pipelines. There's like media pipelines where you start watching one show, you get really into one character, you start watching that actor's films, you start getting really into the director of a lot of their films. Like there's just so many ways to like follow it down. And I'm a pursuer. I'm a follower. I enjoy the process of just seeing where the mystery can unfold. And I continue to treat my life that way, even though I have been burned by it before. So that is a couple of brief revelations for a brief month, although less brief than February usually is. And now we'll talk about taking, the first of which is gonna be, actually, I'm putting that into my leaving. Some things are more like, because there's always a way you can use the double negative. You can use the negative or you can just use the positive. Like there's different ways to frame sentences, but you'll just have to wait to see what that one was. I am taking affection with my friends. I have been thinking a lot about this since like last summer, but I think this is something that really holds our culture back, at least in the US, is like our reticence to be more physically affectionate with our friends and people we put in like a non-romantic category. Although I'd say a lot of my friendships have like a romantic nature to them and just sort of like the consideration and thoughtfulness and like intimacy of our relationship, some more than others. But I'm like a very physically affectionate person. I just really enjoy like expressing myself that way, I guess. Like it's not even conscious. There'll just be times where I'm like, I feel like reaching out and extending my touch to this person. And I won't do it with people where I can just tell that they're not like I have some friends where they're just not touchy people. And I don't know where that really came from, but I just know that like, they're not going to receive it well. And then there's some friends where like, they're just as touchy and it's like amazing. Cause it's just like, oh my God, we get to just, I don't have to hold anything in. I get to like fully express myself, and not like deny my intuition at all. And I think like, especially for men, one of the traps they fall into, or at least straight men, one of the traps they fall into is that they feel like they need to get a girlfriend to have any like sort of any of that sort of emotional, romantic, like physical intimacy and fulfillment. But I'm like, I think that we would be a lot less dependent on like monogamous, romantic, like traditional relationships if we just opened up our friendships a little bit more to touch. And like, I don't want to sound like a pervert here, but like, I just don't see what's so wrong with like, you know, just stimming out with your friends and just, you know, I love to make my friends feel good. And I don't know why we have to be so like sterilized about, okay, if they're your romantic partner and you've had sex with them, then you can like hold their hand and rub their arm and like hug them all the time and like cuddle and stuff. It's like, no. And it does take a while with a friend to build the trust and to build the intimacy where it makes sense to have that like open portal. But I'm like, I'm trying to find a way where I can make like a monogamous romantic relationship like obsolete in my life, because again, I go around and I ask people, name a couple you like, and people are taking way too long to respond. And I'm like, what's going on, you guys? Like I went to an open mic and somebody on the stage, actually the person that welcomed me into comedy, was like, I'm single. And I went, woo. And they were like, why did you woo? That's not good. And I was like, well, if you knew the things I knew, maybe you'd think it was. So then I went up on stage afterwards as I was hosting. This is why I love hosting, because like I always have shit to say. And when I'm just in the audience watching an open mic and I'm done with my set and I'm just watching, there's always something I want to say to the comedian, but a lot of times people will leave before I get the chance to like say it to them. So when I was a host, I got to go up and like say the little thing I wanted to say. And in that case, I went up and I said, okay, real quick, who here in the audience has a couple that they like in their life? I hold the mic out, waiting for some clapping, some wooing. It was silent. In a room of at least 30 people. That haunts me. Okay. There could be a lot of reasons for that. I know you're probably spinning up ideas in your mind, but like, why? What is going on? So I'm just like, okay, I'm not like, I need to stay single forever. I'm very much open. I would love to be in love. Okay. But I'm also like, I'm really just looking for a companion. Like I'm really just looking for companionship and intimacy with companionship. And to some of you, you might be like, I don't see how that's any different. We don't need to talk about it in this podcast. Come back around. We'll talk about companionship another time. Like my sexuality, I'm a companion sexual. That's what I am. I want to be More than friends, less than lovers. That's what I'm looking for. Okay. That's all I need. And from a scientific perspective, I think the stat is like just the amount of oxytocin you get from like a 10 second hug. Like most of us are really touch starved. Maybe even if you're in a romantic monogamous relationship, you might be touch starved. Like we just need a lot of that. We're meant to do a lot of that, but we spend so much of our time alone, like not in community. It's like, could use a lot more. So I just kind of like, I just want to put that out there. Like obviously consensual touch is very important, but getting to a place where you're able to extend more of that to your friends. Like, I think that can make the world go round. I think it would make us a lot more happy, a lot more secure, feeling a lot more at peace, cared for, etc. Okay, what else are we taking? I am going to go ahead and take flirting with my endocrinologist. It would make my wildest dreams come true if you were watching this. I don't think he is, but there is just something about... Okay, the other thing is like, I never know if people know if I'm flirting with them. I asked somebody last year and he was like, yeah, I did know. But my endocrinologist, I'm like, do you know that like when I got dressed in the morning, it was for you? Did you know that I put on this Alaska sweatshirt, this sexy number for you? And you know what? He complimented it. So it was worth it, you guys. This is what you get for me recording this podcast at like 10:59 p.m. is that I'm Lucy the hell goosey. Okay. We're on my couch tonight because if I were sitting on my bed, you would see the mountain of clothes I have not put away from my trip, and I would also probably snooze, and that would mean that you would inherently lose. So I don't really know why I had to say that I'm taking flirting with my endocrinologist. I wrote this down 2 to 3 weeks ago. I thought it was relevant and important. February is a short month, but somehow this already feels outdated because I'm like, I'm not going to see him for another 5 to 11 months. So I don't know how I'm going to keep this up. I have to find ways. Okay. Also obsessed with this new framework I was introduced to on my trip. I need to convey the level of spirit and enthusiasm I have around this to you. Like, this is the point of the podcast to like, if you were tuned the hell out, thinking about your own life and your worries, it's time to lock in. Lock the hell in. I'm about to introduce you to something that could be helpful. If it's not, leave it. If it's not, leave it. Okay. It was introduced to me on my trip from my friend's lover's roommate's friend. Okay. That's all you need to know. I want to give credit to where credit's due, and it's due to my friend's lover's roommate's friend. The concept is a rubric for evaluating the type of people you want to keep around. This could bring clarity to you. It could not. Anyway, the rubric is, can they hang? Are they okay? And do they get it? When I first heard this, it kind of pissed me off because I knew what all those three things meant, but I didn't understand the context or the nuance or what they specifically meant to the person that created them. Here's the interpretation. It's basically like you're on a trip with somebody. First, you go down the line. Can they hang? That means like, are they a good time? Are they a down-ass bitch? Are they going to participate in the events and things that you're doing? Are they going to be a complainer? Are they going to just kind of be down and out? Like, are they not going to be very willing to engage? Like, you know, those people that are just sort of like resistant and not flexible. It's like, if you can hang, it's like you're going to come to karaoke and you're going to be somewhat cheerful, etc. I think, like, to me, this is the easiest one to get. Like, this is such a visceral thing to me. Like, when someone's a good hang, I'm like, yes. When someone's a good time, it's just like, absolutely, you're a good hang. So that's one dimension of it. The next dimension is, are they okay? This one's much more up for interpretation. And also, you can kind of triage this. Like, to me, someone being a good hang is much more important than someone not being okay. Because I have a lot of like mentally ill friends. I'm just used to that at this point. And in fact, I think that helps them get it, which is the third dimension. But someone cannot be okay for a period of time, and I'm going to support them, and I'm going to be their friend, and I'm going to help them through it. If someone is actively destroying their life and just creating chaos willingly, that's not someone you want to accept into your life for a while. So find your own way to describe, like, are they okay to you? Like, I don't mean are they okay in terms of like their personality's decent. I mean like just their well-being. Like, are they okay? The third one is, do they get it? This to me is what separates an acquaintance from a friend. If you can hang and you're pretty okay, boom. Like, I can be in the same room as you, no problem. But once you get it, that's when I'm going to be talking to you all night. Okay? And get it means like, do they get you? Do they get your politic? Do they get your sense of humor? Do they understand the type of media you're watching? Do they just like, are they on the same wavelength? And this is a framework and a rubric that's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard to understand if those words I just said didn't make sense to you. Like, there's only so many ways I can describe this. And the unfortunate thing is, like, if this is not making sense to you, that means that you don't get it. Okay. So the meta part of this is like, the people that get it are the people that when I explain this to, they're latching on and they're like, they want to learn more. And they're like, okay, this is like interesting. Like, the people in my life that would find this interesting are the people that get it. Therefore, like, it's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing that way. It's like, if you buy into this, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And then you have to find other people that don't. And those people for you would get it. Does that make sense? Okay. So we were using this on the trip to kind of evaluate, like, you know, the participants on the Close Friends Conference, other people in our life. Like, it's just, it doesn't even have like a, it's not like I'm like, I am grading everyone and then I eject them once I finish the grade. It just helps to like explain compatibility and explain connections and explain why you feel more drawn to some people than others. Because a lot of times, all I can say is like, I just don't really click with that person, but I don't know why. And usually, now I know, it's like, I feel bad because some people I don't click with, even if they're a good hang. And I'm like, I should be able to click with them because they're a good hang. But the reason I can't is because they don't get it. Okay? So populate the comments with questions on this. Like, I'm trying to flesh this out. I'd love to get it on TikTok. I am a cultural propagator, so I don't need to create these concepts, but I do find the need to spread them. The Close Friends Conference, that's my own IP, okay? And I'll spread it. But most of the time, I'm propagating. Okay, finally on taking, I'm taking the phrases reaching parity and stolen valor. Love, like, for me, this is, reaching parity gives terminology to an experience I've had so many times in the Pacific Northwest, especially when I'm in Portland, where I'll just be like, I'll just see this mom in like a balaclava and like Lisa Says Ga and like weird toe shoes pushing this like super futuristic stroller, and the baby has like a political sign in its little baby carriage, and I'm like, that is reaching parody. Like, that's Portlandia. Like, that's not real. You know, when there's times you're like, this is a TV show about the place that I live. This is not the place that I live. That's reaching parody. Amazing phrase. Need to use that more. I also love the phrase stolen valor. I think that can come up, and it feels so good whenever you're able to apply it. It feels so good. It feels so good. Words can feel so good. Vocabulary can be so satisfying. Anybody else like vocab? Anybody else like vocab? Okay. What I am leaving is wearing my glasses all the time. And some of you may be saying, yeah, you can just wear contacts. No, I'm saying not wearing my glasses and not wearing contacts, which is what I'm doing right now. And if you're watching on video, you're probably seeing me squint a lot. Don't worry about it. Basically, I have been getting a lot of headaches. For the past 2 years, I thought that I didn't have vision insurance for a number of reasons I'm not going to get into, because I have a sense and an ability to determine that probably is not going to be entertaining. I just realized from my sexy ass endocrinologist that I actually do have vision insurance. So God bless him. Not even his job. And he got me in with an appointment. Love him. So I'm going to get my eyes checked. I think maybe I'm experiencing eye strain that's giving me headaches because when I don't wear my glasses as much, I don't really get them. Could be misguided, okay? But my friend Sheridan does this. She'll just have days where she just doesn't wear her glasses. Like she'll just walk outside and everything will be a little bit blurry. And I just didn't think that that was like feasible. I'm a pedestrian, you guys, so I'm not driving. I'm not hurting anyone. Sometimes it's just nice to let the world, when like I've lived in this apartment in this neighborhood long enough where it's like, I know my daily routes. I know what I'm looking for. It's not like I really need to read the street signs or anything. Like I know what I'm passing. Like I have enough familiarity that I don't actually need to see it crystal clear. And in fact, it can bring a little bit of novelty to see it a little bit bokeh, to see it a little bit blurry, to see it a little bit out of focus. It's kind of nice. So I've been enjoying that as a way to sort of spice up your life. I'm also leaving crossing the bathroom threshold after dinner without brushing my teeth. So this is something that I developed way back when because I'm a revenge bedtime procrastinator. I hate getting ready for bed. That's something I am the opposite of proactive about. It's almost hard for me to react to it. Like I just hate doing it. So I have reinstated after I've eaten dinner and I'm done eating for the night, if I go to the bathroom to pee, I have to get ready for bed, even if it's 8 p.m. Because then I have no excuse when I'm finally done. Like right now, I haven't done it because I'm filming this right now and I can't wear my retainer. Or I could, but it would probably create an uncomfortable acoustic experience for you. I can't do it tonight, but I need to. Like, and the other part of this is you have to drink a lot of water because some of you might not be going pee enough for this to even happen to you, okay? So I'm saying this for me. I need to do this in March. And now without further ado, let's take a little break from my voice to hear Lena Daniel, my fact checker, explain everything that I was loony about last month.
Hey y'all, it's Lena Daniel back with a fact check of last month's Revelatorium episode. There are a couple of hard to pronounce words. So the first one being the Norwegian philosophy to be in nature is friluftsliv. And then the Norway outdoor kindergarten is called friluftsbarnehager. And then the next fact checked is to see what the indigenous name for Christ Church is, which is Otautahi. And then the last thing I'll mention for last month's episode is that the plural of isthmus can be isthmuses or isthmi. Thanks for tuning in.
Amazing. I am someone who I have such an aversion to ever saying that like I'm tired. Because when I'm hanging out with someone and they're like, I'm tired, I'm like, okay, well then fuck me, I guess. I take it so personally where I'm like, damn, okay, I guess we're just gonna have a bad time then. So when I'm tired, I try to keep it up because I'm like, I don't want to be that person. And I'm like, if you listen to a podcast and the host was like, I'm tired, I'd be like, okay, so it's not going to be good then, click. But sometimes when you're tired, it's actually the best because you're delirious, your sensor's weaker, and you'll say shit that you're not supposed to say. You say shit that you wouldn't maybe be as free to say when you're well rested. So I wanted to know from you all this month a few things related to my month, one of which being, do you consider yourself a proactive person? How so? If not, is there anyone else in your life who is? I just wanted to see, like, are we all proactive? Maybe we all are because we were joined together by my, you know, neurotic YouTube creations. Or most of us were. I've been hearing a lot of you have been telling your friends about this podcast. And you know what? That means more than the world to me. It means the moon, the sky, and the heavens above. Because someone came up to me after my comedy hosting gig and said they listened to the podcast. And I was like, that is so wonderful because my whole life it's been my YouTube. So to hear that there's a new project that I'm working on that has meaning is excellent. Craving meaning. I'm always trying to form meaning. Okay, let's hear from you all who is proactive. An anonymous listener in rural Virginia. In rural Virginia for now. They're in rural Virginia for now. And they're 27. They said, to the question of are you proactive? Not at all. So we got one. I'm a textbook procrastinator in pretty much all aspects of my life. My girlfriend is way more proactive than me, and it amazes me how she will just pick up the phone to make a call or get an annoying task out of the way, or even just get ready for bed and go to sleep at a reasonable hour, all of which are things I struggle with. Certainly. Like, if I could be proactive about getting ready for bed, I would save the world. Like, probably.
I also liked this because it's like, is proactivity a trait that you can recognize in other people? Because I thought so, because when I started to just like say, hey, you guys, I'm proactive, people would be like, yeah, you are. And I was like, okay, it feels good to be recognized. It's important to affirm yourself, okay, be self-aware. But it's like, okay, you guys are seeing that too. So I'm showing up for you the way that you're showing up. I'm showing up for you the way that I'm showing up for me too.
Okay, Leticia in Paris, France, who's 25, said, I'd say I'm pretty proactive. There is a problem. I try to tackle it as quickly as possible. But sometimes I'm not really good at being solution-oriented when others are involved. For example, I think I'm less proactive in my main romantic relationship than I am alone. I also have a best friend that is super duper proactive, and I have her to thank for deciding to quit my job. She's very, there is a problem, let us find a solution now. Love her.
That's amazing. Okay. And I love that proactivity. Like, again, I love that proactivity for my own good is a trait that you can recognize in others and appreciate. Cause I think it's a positive trait. I'm like, when is that not positive? I mean, it's so like, I'm a proactive person, but I'm also a slow burn where it's like, I will make moves when the moves are ready to be made. You know, like it might take me a while to get ready, but when I'm ready, I'm gonna jump. And so to hear she helped you quit your job, huge. Anonymous said, in some areas, yes. I think in general, I am proactive because if there's something I want to do or try, I usually just do it. If there's a plan I want to make, I just do it. But I think when it comes to interpersonal relationships, I'm not very proactive. Like I hate making the first move or asking someone out. Even with friends, I think it's hard for me to ask someone to hang out. See, this is like something I definitely recognize when someone isn't proactive. And sometimes it's like, are they not asking me to hang out because they're not a good sort of like pursuer, or like they're not interested in taking initiative, or is it because they don't like me? And you might be like, they're just not into you if they don't ask you to hang out. No, I have literally case in point, like identified people where it's like, they're just kind of like more lackadaisical about their social life. And they just don't really like put in the effort. Or maybe by the time they realize they do want to hang out with someone, it's like everyone's busy and it's too late. So it's just like, it's just interesting that, you know, it's not like a universal, it doesn't, proactivity and perfectionism for me don't apply themselves universally in all departments. Usually I am proactive, like same as perfectionism, I'm proactive about the thing, the categories that matter to me most. So like when I used to be a really, really diligent student, I'd be very proactive. When I used to be really into my job, like my corporate job, I'd be very proactive. Those things don't matter to me as much anymore. And like, for example, like the cleanliness of my house, like that doesn't matter to me so much. So I'm not very proactive about doing my dishes and whatnot. But like my relationships, I'm like, those carry me. I want to put so much effort and thought into those. So I'd be interested to see if like you're not doing that for your interpersonal relationships because they're not as important to you as like other things you're proactive about, or like how that stacks up to you. Okay, this was an interesting take on it. So Sophie, who's 26 in New York, said, if a situation will not affect another person, I am less inclined to be proactive. I need the social pressure, I think. Certainly. It's way easier to be proactive, especially if you think the other person involved is going to drop the ball. But when it's myself and it's just me dropping the ball, no one gets hurt, doesn't really matter. But like for group trips, I'm like, that takes a lot of coordination. So I have to be proactive because I can't invite 6 people to go to Mexico the week before. That's not going to work. So hear you, feel you. Love that. Okay, let's keep it pushing. I wanted to ask about rigorous compatibility tests for who you invite into your life. Like, are you discerning with your friendships and with your social life, or do you just accept most people in and you don't really have a strong, you know, you don't have a can they hang, are they okay, do they get it. I didn't have one of those before, but I had like a very intuitive discernment of like that person clicks with me or not. This was so interesting to read about. So Lauren, who's 25 in Houston, said, I'm quite discerning. I have a few major friendship breakups and have certain family members I don't talk to. I honestly think I've always been this way. I remember in sixth grade, I switched lunch tables. Hilariously, this was spelled munch tables. Imagine a table of munches. That's called the GSA. this is what happens. This is what happens. Okay. So she switched tables because the girls I'd been sitting with were dramatic / mean. I think this was sort of the first time I looked around me and considered who I wanted to have in my life and made the tough choices to move. Yes. It is a tough, like, it's a tough choice. It takes being proactive. It's a little bit of both. Imagine that. They bleed into each other. There's an intersection. I went to the intersection of proactivity and discernment, and everyone knew you. That's kind of what it's like to be in the Catherout sort of internet space, is that if you're at the intersection of those, like, you're going to find my viewers. Okay. Olivia, who's 22 in the Bay, said, I often find I have this weird mental block when it comes to letting people in at first. I think it stems from insecurity and worry that people won't like me, or that they will like my other friends more than me and I will lose friends as a result. I recently ran into a very old friend and our conversation was easy and great, but I had this huge hesitation in being the one to reach out to keep the friendship going. Many of my friends are people I've known for years or people I've met through old friends, so I've not had to be very brave in finding people to connect with. This is definitely a trait about myself that I want to work on. I know deep down you can never have too many friends and there's no harm in expanding my circle, but often I get protective of myself and the friends I have. See, this is so interesting to me because it's like being so discerning to the point, or maybe it's like, maybe this is sort of lacking proactivity to the point that like your discernment gets the best of you, where it's like you're very discerning and you found people that you deeply click with. That's amazing. Like you found people that are so your people and so good that it's like when a new person comes in, it's like, oh, are they gonna stack up? Are they gonna be the kind of person I want in my life? Only one way to find out is to keep seeing them. So I'm gonna, if you're listening to this, Olivia, text her. Kayo Rosa, who is 28 in Vitoria, Espirito Santo, Brazil, come to Brazil, said, not really discerning, but I feel that it should be. I've always been the one who spends time with whoever wants to hang out with me. And this is what I want to say about this. Being discerning isn't good, and being like non-discerning isn't bad. Cassie, who's 24 in Maryland, said, I started figuring out what kind of people I like being around in college, I would say. And this was something I wanted to highlight, because it's like, it takes time. Like, and that's why maybe if you're younger, it can be more helpful to have that framework or that rubric of like, can they hang? Are they okay? Do they get it? Loved this response from Lynn in Seattle, who's 30, who said, I cull decisively if the person does not match my energy, which is small, curious, and giving. Obsessed with the word cull. Maybe you have to add that to the stolen valor and reaching parity list, because cull is a great word. And yeah, you clearly know exactly what you're looking for. And I think that's huge. Like, that's just going to bring the right people around. Anonymous, who's 28, said, since COVID and winter, I really only spend time with people who are willing to mask and or test for an indoor hang. Right. Because like, this is huge too. Like, you really do have to be discerning if you want to be remotely COVID safe. Because in the summer, yeah, you can be outside. But in the winter, it's like, damn, you're really limited. So I appreciate you saying this, because that's definitely a dimension of discernment. Or just people that are going to be especially if you have like needs, like people are that, we all have needs, but like people that are going to be accommodating of them is huge. Ooh, this one was really interesting. Claire, who's 21 in Fort Collins, Colorado, said, I am more accepting of people into my social life than I probably should be. I am of two minds. I believe that it's important to make friends with people who don't relate to your upbringing or align with your belief system, which doesn't mean I let friends get away with shitty behavior, but I try to be tolerant. And I worry sometimes when I remember the phrase Show me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. Do you guys believe in that? Because I do. It's really important for me. That's why I really like meeting people's friends, and I like having my friends meet my friends, because I think that you do learn something about somebody by seeing their friends. And it's not to say that if I don't like your friends, I'm not going to like you. I have a couple people where it's just like, oh yeah, I don't really like the people that they spend time with, but that could just be because they're not discerning people, you know? And I'm just more discerning than them. So I'm like, I personally wouldn't spend time with those people, but like, we'll just hang out one-on-one. I don't need to hang out with your friends. But I do feel like my friends are a reflection of me because I'm a discerning person. And maybe that kind of aids in the discernment is I'm like, I don't want people to see who I'm hanging out with and be like, oh, but there's no point in thinking that way, because it's like, no matter what, if I put all of my friends in the same room, not all of them would like all of them. That's absurd. And by the way, the third metric of get it doesn't mean you'll never have an argument or disagreement. It just means you're coming from maybe like a shared basis for conversation, whatever that means. Okay, I'm familiar with this. Blake, who's 24 in Atlanta, said, when I was in middle school, my home life was quite bad, and I was also a bit bigger than most people my age. And the combination of these left me desperate for attention and friendship. I had wonderful friends in my life, but my insecurity was a hole that left me unable to feel full. So I would hang out with anyone who I deemed cooler than me, prettier than me, more popular than me, even if they treated me and others poorly. And this is kind of a commentary on that sort of show me your friends and show me who you are, where it's like, if you want to appear cool and popular and pretty, it's like, you're gonna want to have, like, I mean, I guess then you'd want to have friends that you consider to be those things, right? And actually, when I was in Oaxaca, we were walking around and I was like looking at my friends and I was like, if it's true that like you make friends with people of a similar attractiveness level to you, then I'm doing great, baby, because my friends are so cool, hot, sexy, and fun. I'm like, you guys are all so attractive. Like, this is bonkers. Like, they all have such great style. I was just like, wow, this is just excellent. Like, like, I just think my friends are great. I don't know if that's true. I remember reading that one somewhere. Maybe I can get a fact check from Lena on that, if there's any studies around your friends being the same attractiveness level as you. So if you want to get the answer to that and you don't want to Google it yourself, come back for episode 16, I believe. I once knew of a girl, a tall tale. I once knew of a girl that would very like specifically befriend people that were like she viewed as like tens. You know, like she wanted to be friends with like beautiful, beautiful girls. And I was like, I've never explicitly sought out like I need the person to be physically attractive to me, you know? But then they do say that about like straight men. They're like on TikTok, they're always like, straight men are not friends with ugly girls. And I'm like, well, and then I have no examples. I have no examples. So I'm like, okay. But I also don't even have that many straight guy friends, but I'm like, yeah, I'm not seeing that a lot. Now I'm just like overthinking, where I'm like, are you guys going to think I'm a bigot for saying that people can be ugly? Oh Lord. Yeah. I guess if I'm thinking about the dynamic of perception of how people will perceive me based on my friends, I'm actually not thinking of just like people at large. But sometimes when I make new friends, I do think about what my existing friends would think of them. And I think sometimes that helps me practice discernment. But sometimes it can get in your way, because it's like, just because a couple of your friends wouldn't like this person doesn't mean they can't bring you joy and be a good hang to you and get it for you and be okay to you. You know, it's like you're the only person that needs to be in that relationship with them. Your friends don't have to be. So, okay, very shockingly, Grace, who's 27 in Durham, North Carolina, said, one extremely extroverted friend told me one time that he would rather spend time with someone he hated than be alone with it. Than be alone with himself, which I find completely insane. I am like pretty far along the extroversion spectrum, and that seems like that seems like maybe a person that can hang a little too much and is not okay, because like it's not that I don't enjoy my own company. I just find life richer in the company of other people. Like, I feel more myself around other people because I can express myself to them maybe better than I can express myself when I'm home alone. But definitely not someone I hated. That's like, that is like, do you like yourself? Like that's getting into self-loathing territory. And also I just wanted to say like one overarching trend in these responses were that a lot of introverts were very discerning. And that makes sense because it's like if you have a very sensitive social battery that gets drained easily, you can't spend it on the riffraff. You can't. That would be so sad if you spent it on people you didn't really feel strongly for and then you didn't have anything left over for the people that you did. For me, it's like I have like almost unlimited social energy. So it's like it doesn't even make sense that I'm so discerning because like but no, it like only some things, only spending, I have to be discerning because there's some people I could hang out with and it wouldn't fill my social battery at all. Not to erase their humanity, but it's just like some people like are fulfilling to hang out with and boost you. And some people don't really like actually, they're not very stimulating to hang out with. I'm looking for people that are stimulating. I'm trying to stim the hell out. And finally, you're taking and leaving. What are we doing here? I also just did want to say, and what Colleen or Colleen under her weighted blanket in Pittsburgh, who's 26, said, I have already shared this outside of this microphone in real life. She said, my love of appointment TV is what I'm taking from February into March. I ditched most of my streaming services and use an over-the-air antenna to watch my local network TV. Feels so much less stressful to watch TV because I'm not bombarded with thousands of options. And I love the concept of appointment TV, especially for Abbott Elementary. May Queen Quinta reign forever. Amen. Amen. It's so wild like how far we've gotten in the streaming wars. End war. End all the wars. End them all. I don't want any war. Not even the streaming wars. Come on. No war. Name a war that's been good. I was talking about this with people because I was like, yes, it's so nice to have like intentional time in front of the TV. Not just to be able to press play and something just streams and streams and streams and you can sit in front of it and zonk out for as long as you want. It's like, no, hey guys, I gotta get home because Abbott Elementary is on at 8 p.m. on Tuesday. And if you don't have TiVo, you can't even record that. So it's like, it really makes a date out of it. It makes an event out of it. Like how fun, you know? Although someone last night when I was talking to this said that he was paying $250 a month for his cable. It sounds like you don't have cable, you have an antenna. Chloe, who's 19, in their cozy bed in Altarea said, they're not going to be taking listening to my thoughts on my period or after 8 p.m. as objective truth, but listening to them to reveal the cause of my dark night of the soul or as clues to my biggest anxieties and what they say about me. I relate to this, and I relate it also to when people like drunk truths, you know, it's like things that you talk about sober and then things that you say when you're drunk, being more revealing of like your hidden desires or like what's privately inside of you. When you're on your period and when it's past the witching hour of 7 p.m., 8 p.m., that's when the creepy crawly thoughts start to come out. And it does, like, you shouldn't like hold them close, but it's like you should at least just watch them, you know, flitter around. Really hard to detach yourself from your own thoughts, but it's a powerful skill. Grace, who's 24 in Brooklyn, said, they're bringing mingling. I am a mingler at heart. Where are my minglers at? Mingler? I hardly know her. I love to chit chat with strangers and friends of friends. The leap day brought me so much joy because it was a day of mingling and connecting with new people. I wish I had had the wherewithal. The leap year day was the day after I got back from Mexico, so there was no chance in hell. I was going to go to a nude spa, and I did have dinner plans, but both of those got eradicated for reasons outside of my control. So did not meet, but neither of those would have been necessarily meeting new people, unless I met new nude people. That would be fun. What if you made a friend while nude? Oh my God. Like I've never ever like met someone nude and then gotten to know them. I've only ever known someone clothed and then seen them nude. Going the other way could be a revelation. But I'm so with you, Grace. This was something I was talking about with my friend Jared on the trip. It's just like we're both the kind of extrovert where it's just like talking to strangers actually is so enlightening and fills me up. I think most people dread it, But when you are a curious person and you have honest questions to ask somebody and you're not unafraid to just like ask what's on your mind, you can get to very, very like interesting dynamic places in a conversation. I love the like seemingly limitless ways a conversation with a stranger can go. Sometimes when you have a more solidified friendship, it's like you kind of know the areas, like you know the kind of updates you want to get from them, and you know, it might not ping pong around to like unsuspecting areas, but with a stranger, anything can happen. Allison, who's 24 in Tallahassee, Florida, said she's taking finally feeling at home in this city. Just moved here a year ago. And I feel like there's so many moments where I realize I'm at home here, but I'm 2.5 years in and I'm starting to feel like a new sense of belonging here. And like just a few of the people I've met over the last like 3 months just really get me. And I'm like, this is cool. I didn't know that I could get, like, I remember, I might even cry. I remember when I moved here, I would journal, and I have a journal entry like pretty shortly before I met my friend Sean, where I'm just like, I wonder if I'm going to meet any, this is actually kind of sweet. I was like, I wonder if I'm going to meet any Ellie's or any Jared's or any Sheridan's here, which are like, you know, some of my close friends. Because I was like, I want, like, moving to Seattle would be so worth it if I were able to find those types of like lifelong, amazing, just friends who are so compatible with you. And then a month later, I met Sean. And then on this Mexico trip, Ellie, Sean, and Jared all got to spend time together. And I was like, and they all loved each other. And I was like, of course. Of course. But it's like, it's so cool that I got to like, I added one to the fray, and he fit right in. And that's how I knew. I was like, you never know who's around the corner. You never know. And like, I had no idea some of these people were going to pop into my life, but like, I just feel so at ease with them where I just don't feel like there's anything forced. Like even when I'm texting them, I don't feel like I have to put on like a mask or send any emojis I don't want to send. It's just like, it's just awesome. It's just awesome. And I'm sure in 6 months I'll feel insecure in some ways, but right now I'm just like, just meeting a couple of those people, I'm like, I'm going to be okay. It's going to be okay, baby, by Muna. Lauren, who's 21 in Knoxville, Tennessee, said that she's taking a new crush in a very confusing sense of, do I love this girl romantically or do I just really, really deeply love her in a platonic way that I've never felt before? Girl, do I know it. Girl, do I know it. I'm like, sometimes words are helpful and then sometimes they're not. And being confused about the platonic, romantic, sexual nature of a relationship is kind of one of the most delightful places to be. Like, it's, we have so many categories for our relationships. Sometimes it's nice when one is like straddling the line and it's like on the fence and you're like, what are you to me? Kind of amazing and like rare. I don't know. I think that might be a more than friends, less than lover situation. You might be companion sexual. That sounds like a companion to me. It sounds like a lot of intimacy, and that's all I really care about. It's like, if there's intimacy, I'm not worried. I'm not worried about what it actually means. Similarly, River, who's 23 in Des Moines, said they're taking thanking myself, prolonged goodbyes, and a rekindled crush. I want to know what prolonged goodbyes mean. Does that mean a 10-minute hug? I love thanking myself. That's beautiful. I don't do that enough. And a rekindled crush. That does not happen often to me, that a crush is rekindled. Usually, once the crush doesn't go the way I want it to, I wrap it up and the bow never comes undone. Okay, finally, what are we collectively leaving behind in February? What's not coming into March? What's staying in my birth month? Grace again said, reading into things, whether that's searching for meaning in someone's silence or looking between the lines when there's probably just empty space. It might be time to start taking things at face value. I'm also leaving behind my split ends. I got a haircut. And sometimes that's why I enjoy just when you have a lot of, when you have enough intimacy in the relationship, when there's a silence, you can just kind of go, what are you thinking about? And they'll actually tell you. And I feel like that's such a powerful question because you can tell by the amount of time they take to respond if they're giving you the whole truth or not. It's like such a fun question. I did that a lot on my trip. And like, it's something I can only do with people that I have a lot of trust and like time with. Helen said, I'm leaving, not talking to the guy I'm dating about what is exactly going on between us. We used to be friends, but have been going on dates for a little over a month and neither of us has started a conversation about where exactly it's going. And while that was fun for a month, I need to know what's going on and where this is heading. I hope to leave this whole not talking thing behind. I was watching one of Sally Dar Griffin's Instagram stories and someone had asked about wanting to have the like, what are we conversation? And her take was like, don't have it. She was like, it's never gone well when I have to initiate the what are we conversation. But I was just like, well, what's the alternative? You just wait the hell around for him to do it? You just end things prematurely without asking the question? I'm like, what? Maybe she has more experience than I do, but I'm just like, in this situation, if you're friends first, oh my God, that's such a sensitive situation to go from friends to dating. It's like, you don't want it to go to nothing. You want to, if it's not going to be fully fledged dating, you want it to go back to friends. So you really want to have tact about that conversation. So I believe in you. When the time is right, you can always write a letter. Chloe's leaving, obsessively yearning over a lost friendship, being a sentimental little shit, living in my past and romanticizing it. Woo. Love to be limerent, live in scenarios that aren't the present and stir up some emotional turmoil and call it regulation. Anonymous, who's 25 in Seattle, said that she's leaving roommates. I'm moving into my own apartment for the first time. I'm so excited, but I've always loved coming home to someone at the end of the day. And I want that so bad. That's what I get from these group trips is like amazing to come back to the Airbnb and there's always somebody there. Like, and when you wake up, there's people there. Like, it's just like, so I'm like, I want that again. And I think there's maybe a 13% chance that I have a roommate prospect sometime in the next 2 years, which doesn't, you might be like, well, that doesn't sound very optimistic, but I'm like, I just don't want to count my eggs before they hatch. Finally, last response I'll read is from Lisa in Korea, who's 27, who really inspired me because she said that she's leaving 5+ hours of daily screen time. Screen time amounts feel so personal, but I would so much rather do anything else with that time. Yes, I agree. That's like literally a very intimate question to ask somebody is what their screen time is, but I will do it because it tells you a lot about the person. My head has felt most clear with a 3-hour daily screen time, and I hope to work down to that eventually. Also, leaving my fear of speaking as a naturally introverted person, especially in non-English settings. My default setting is complete silence and nonverbal communication, but I need to trust myself and just be talking because that's the only way to improve in a different language. The habit of complete silence will only go away with practice. Okay, to address the screen time thing, I was looking through my screen time because I thought it would be way down for my trip since like we were out and about all day. I was talking to my friends. We didn't have fast service, you know, in Mexico. It wasn't down that much. It probably was somewhere around 2 to 3 hours a day, but goddamn, did that feel good. I agree. And then I took a glance at this metric that was like phone pickups, so like the number of times you like actually pick up your phone, and it was egregious. It was like 180 times or something like ridiculous like that. And I was like, that's gotta lower. So even today, I'm like, today is the first day of the rest of my life. And the rest of my life, I want to spend not picking up my phone as much and making that just like a little challenge. Okay. I challenge you. A ver, who does it better? You or me? So I want to commit. And like today I had jazz band rehearsal and in the lull, I just wanted to see if anyone had texted me because that's the only thing I get on my lock screen. The only notifications I get in my lock screen are texts and Signal messages and calls, not even emails. So I just wanted to see. And then I was like, this is just lame. Like, what? No, just leave it. Leave it like a dog. Leave it. That's what I should start doing. Just telling myself to leave it. Treating myself like a beloved dog. So yeah, that's where we'll leave it for today. Wherever you're listening, please, please, please take a screenshot, post it with a photo of where you're at. I love when people do that. And we now have a Revelatorium Instagram page. So if you want to follow it at Revelatorium, I'll be posting when our zines are up, when new podcast episodes are up, give you little exclusive ways to fill out the surveys. Lots of fun stuff happening there. And I'm just geeking out on there. It's like, I'm kind of just shit posting. I'd love to start posting memes. I want to make some like artist way memes. So maybe some podcast memes. So if there were any moments from this episode you thought were really good and you would like to, that you were like, that was a good thought. I'd like to return to that or maybe share that, or like, that was just a good little moment. Let me know below and I'll make sure to edit that, because I'm not experienced at making clips out of my podcast. So thank you for joining me for episode 15. Revelatorium just celebrated its quinceañera. We had a beautiful dress on. You couldn't see it, but it was excellent. So thank you so much for listening. I will see you all next time, and Cather out.